everyone. My name is Belinda Granger, and I'm the professional liaison for Challenge Family. I'm also known throughout the triathlon world as being a bit of a mother hen to the pro athletes. Of course, given the current circumstances, I've been thinking about the athletes a lot lately. So we came up with the idea of Coffee Calls with Belinda, which basically gives me and you an opportunity to check in with them all and see how they're all going. So welcome to the official Challenge Family podcast. I think it's time for a coffee. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Coffee Calls with Belinda. Now, my next guest is an absolute superstar. He's renowned around the world as the German biking powerhouse, and he is definitely one of my all-time favourite athletes, both on and off the race course. Welcome to the podcast, Sebi Kinley.
Oh, Belinda, thanks. I'm not supposed to turn the camera on because you would see my face turn slightly red.
I find that hard to believe, Sebi. Now, how are you doing? And where exactly are you right now?
Oh, Belinda, I mean, I have to say, just even talking to you and hear your voice honestly makes me a little bit sad, because usually we always meet at races and always in, well, together with all the people we know from the races and so on. And it feels like forever. Since we met the last time, so of course I'm a little bit sad, like everybody is with the whole situation. But other than that, I think that's one of the good things as sport persons. We know there are up and downs, and and you get to know yourself very well, and you start to know how you handle situations like that, I guess.
Actually, that's a really good point, Sebi, and you're dead right. I think as athletes, you guys are used to, you know, the very, very highs of sport, but also the very, very lows of sport. And so if any person on this planet is prepared for what's been the hands we've been dealt this year, it's athletes for sure.
Yeah, I definitely think so, because you never have this, like, usually 9 to 5, you know, every day is the same job. I mean, you know, I'm in the first real training camp since March, I crashed and broke my collarbone, and you are always sort of prepared for something like that, because you always know within 1 second, I mean, everything can change, and you are used to injuries and so on, and you, yeah, like you said, I mean, you know, you're prepared the best way possible, and then you have a flat tire in a race or whatsoever. So you always sort of like always calculating that there is something happening, that it's not influenceable from your side. And so, yes, I think some athletes are probably mentally prepared a little bit better, but others are probably struggling even harder because, I mean, it's the first time for the last 18 years, 20 years probably. I don't have a race coming up, or I mean, I have a race coming up, but the amount of uncertainty is like so high, and so the goals are definitely, it's difficult, you know, to adjust to something like that for sure.
And it's interesting because, you know, I've been speaking to obviously quite a few athletes, and based here in Noosa, where there are a lot of pro athletes, so I get to talk to them daily. And most of the athletes I've been speaking to are completely fine physically. So, you know, they're ticking over training, everything's going well, but mentally it's a different story. It's been a super tough experience, just like you said, and obviously one that nobody has prepared for. I mean, even though as athletes you are brought up to expect the unexpected, I'm just not sure that anyone could have expected this year, you know. My gosh. How have you been holding up mentally though?
I mean, I have to say, I was in Fuerteventura in Spain in training camp when the whole shit
hit the fan.
Slowly hit the van, and spreading all around the world. And even when we left to Fuerteventura, I already told my coach, maybe we need to have a plan B for Ironman South Africa. That was mm-hmm. the first race we were planning to do. And he was like, no, it's going to happen. It's not a problem. Cape Epic is going to happen. And then this is going to happen. And I mean, even back then, we almost like saw something like this can happen. But of course, I just thought maybe we have struggled a little bit till June or May or whatsoever, and then it's all fine again. And then, of course, we had been 1 week in complete lockdown in Fuerteventura in Spain, and it was almost a relief to come back. I have to say, I think I will never ever do something really bad that brings me to jail, because just one week in our little apartment there was already enough to know I don't want to be in jail.
You don't want to be in that situation. No, I'm hearing you loud and clear. I'm the same. You know, here in Australia at the moment, people in Melbourne, so in Victoria, down south, they're all in lockdown, and you know there's a lot of pro athletes from Melbourne that are in lockdown right now, so they are allowed out for 1 hour a day. They're not allowed to go more than 5 kilometers, and my heart goes out to them, because I don't know if I could do it. I mean, and you know, I'm not even a pro athlete, but it would kill me. You know, it's just tough. Now listen, Sebi, you've recently returned from a training camp in Livigno, in the Italian Alps, with your coach, Philip Seep, and your squad. How long were you actually there for, and how was it?
So that was already the second camp we did. So the first camp was indeed in St. Moritz. We went there straight after the borders opened again in Europe. So the borders were pretty much closed in Europe till the 15th of June, and then we went straight to St. Moritz, and it was super nice. I've never been a big fan of St. Moritz, to be honest, because it's always very, very busy, lots of tourists. It's absolutely beautiful. It's stunning landscapes and mountains and so on, but it's always too busy, in my opinion. So it's I've never really been a big fan, but this time it was absolutely great, because not a lot of people were there, and we had really good conditions. Unfortunately, like 3 days before the end of the camp, I was on a bike ride alone and descending down from Bernina Pass. Actually, not very fast, and then there was a little bit of gravel on the road before construction area, and I crashed and broke my collarbone, which was not a really nice experience, to be honest. But on the other hand, I was just super lucky. I think the surgeon in St. Moritz, he was almost waiting for somebody to crash
to do something bad.
He was basically, I think, out of work since the end of the ski season in February, and since you can't do anything with the surgery against Corona, I think he was happy to help somebody again.
So this is the sort of guy you are. You're such a good bloke that you did this for him.
I mean, to be honest, I mean, I think if something like this should have happened, and at one point it's just, I mean, I was riding 150,000 Ks in my life without breaking a bone. And I mean, it's just a matter of time that it's going to happen. And then it happened at the right time, I guess.
You picked a really good time, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And I listened to my wife that I should have a good insurance for foreign countries. So that was also a good thing. And so it's all right now. And then, like you said, sorry for the long answer. But then we went to Livigno again.
I've been there the first time 2 years ago, and this is definitely a happy place for me. Even, of course, it's at altitude, and of course you want to have good conditions and everything, but at the same time, it's just the right place to put stress on your body, but to relax your mind, you know. It's just, I love the place, and it's also, I think, especially during this time, it's important because I can handle a lot of shit if I prepare for a race, you know. And you always know, well, it's just another 3 weeks of this, and then you can relax
and take it easy.
Yeah, but if you don't know what you're actually doing it for, then it's better you be in a place where you can be happy.
Absolutely. And I've seen some pictures, and it looks absolutely breathtaking. And you had some pretty good weather too.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we didn't took the pictures on the days where we had bad weather.
Of course not. No one does that.
I get supported from them, and of course you don't you're not gonna show the things that are not so nice. I mean, not so nice is, for example, at this time of the year. So we came back last Sunday, and it gets so busy. It gets completely crowded, and of course, especially this year, where a lot of also from the Italian folks are, doing their vacation in their own country. It's getting too packed, but other than that, I absolutely love this place, and it's also, it's the right combination of sport opportunities and good training conditions, but at the same time it also offers a lot of just life quality, I would say.
So are you trying to say nice restaurants and cafes, so good coffee, good red wine?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're speaking absolutely. My language now.
And it's like super super affordable, because especially compared to St. Moritz, they don't have sales tax there. A lot of people go there to buy their cheap drinks and cigarettes.
of course.
But also just a lot of very active people. They have a great bike park and everything. Wow. So yeah, it's pretty nice.
And it's also, correct me if I'm wrong, it's very, even though it's in the Italian Alps, very, very close to the Swiss Alps and to Challenge Davos. Is that correct?
Exactly. Ah. Yeah, it really depends. There is a tunnel that you can just ride in one direction. And it closes like every 15 minutes in one direction or the other direction, so it really depends if you're lucky or not. Usually it's under an hour, and then you are on the race course from Challenge Davos.
Oh, brilliant. Now, Sebi, you're down on the start list to do this race, which I am assuming should be or will be your first race of the year. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Fingers crossed that it's going to happen.
Fingers crossed. I know. Well, I must admit, I took a look at the start list. I've been working with Daniela from Challenge Davos, and as soon as I saw your name on the start list, it made me smile. Definitely looking forward to seeing you finally be able to race again. I'm not sure if you've had a look at the start list, but it's a stellar field, which obviously is to be expected with the lack of racing we've had this year. But you've got yourself, Christian Blumenfeld, Andy Dreitz, Andy Boscherer, Joe Skipper, Peter Hemrick, the defending champ, of course. Another German, Ruben Sepunkt. Is that how you say his last name? Sepunkt?
Sepunkt, yeah.
Sepunkt, okay. And, of course, he's another gun on the
call
bike.
Call him 10 points.
10 that's points. All right, that's much easier for me. I'll remember that one. Maurice Clavel, Patrick Nielsen. That's just to name a few of the top pro men. And all up, I believe there are 20 German pro men racing, which is insane. I mean, we've never had that outside of Germany. Are there any expectations, Sebi? I mean, obviously, under normal circumstances, of course, there'd be expectations for you. I know you go to races and you go to races to win and to give your best. But, I mean, it was so long ago from the last time you raced. So how do you prepare for this race? What are your expectations going into it?
Yeah, that's a really good
question. It's crazy.
I mean, under normal circumstances, to be honest, I think I would not do the race. Because it's just probably a little bit too early after I broke my collarbone, and that
of course
costed me just quite some training, especially in the swim. And I mean, in this field, on this course, it's basically like a world championships.
Yes.
Only Europeans. And I mean, it's probably, I mean, depending on what happens later in the year, I think it's probably the strongest field you're gonna find in any race this year.
Yeah, I agree.
So therefore, I mean, but you know, under these circumstances, I would just love to do a race. That's the first thing. And the next thing is I love the surroundings there. I spent quite some time at altitude, and Davos is at altitude, so that's probably a little bit of an advantage for me. And then I mean, I know a lot of the guys on the start list that you didn't mention, and there are some guys, and you will hear their name probably for the first time in this race, but I've already known them from smaller local races, and also with all the Swift racing that was going on this year, you definitely see some people putting out amazing numbers. And I know from some of these guys that these numbers are actually the real deal. And not just whatever, some random numbers.
Yes, not fudging weight, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
So, but to answer your question is, I don't really know what to expect. I'm just so pumped up to do this race and to get a start, and then I hope there will be more races to come, of course. But if it would be the last race of the year, at least we had basically the European Championships happening.
That's true. And look, I suppose the only good thing is that most athletes are in the same boat. You know, I don't think there's been many athletes that have had the opportunity to race a big race. I know there's been a couple of little local races go ahead, but really the last races that I know of were way back in February, March. We had Challenge Wānaka, obviously, in New Zealand, and then Ironman New Zealand. So I know that Joe Skipper is probably the only one on that start line, or one of the only ones on that start line for Davos that actually has had some race practice this year. But
probably the only one who managed to be over-raced.
Yes,
exactly.
Well, you know, he just did that. You know, he just broke the GB record, the Great Britain record for that 12-hour time trial. I know, he's crazy.
Ridiculous numbers.
Crazy. Yeah. I know. But that's Joe. He's a special boy. He really is.
Yeah.
So, as you said, it must be a mix of apprehension, but also excitement. Almost like you remember when you get ready for your very first race of the year, or back when you were doing your very first world championship. I mean, is it that sort of excitement where you're chomping at the bit to really get to the start line, but on the other hand you're like, oh shit, what can I expect?
I think it's different because I have so much experience now, but at the same time, during this whole year, I realized that it's still important for me, and it's still something I really love, and that I really miss the races, but also, you know, all the things that come with the races, so the meeting the people and so on. And then I also look at it as a chance because, you know, my schedule was always like pretty much more or less the same for the last like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah,
I've always done, you know, Kraichgau, Heilbronn, St. George, Frankfurt or Ross, and then Hawaii. World Championships before that. So this year, if some of the races are gonna happen that I signed it up for, it will be like all different kind of races. I've never been there. And that's something that's also pretty exciting to see some new places and also race like Davos. You know, usually it would not be very high up my list because there's always like a 70.3 World Championships, and then it's preparation for Kona, and you never have the chance to do a race like that, even if you would love to, because there's just too much important races that you need to do, that your sponsors want you to do,
exactly,
and the audience want you to do, and so on. So I'm like super, super excited that I have the chance to do a race like that, because it's an absolutely beautiful, beautiful race. And it's great that hopefully the organizers get rewarded with an absolutely extraordinary field.
Yeah, and you know what, Sebi, that's a perfect way to look at the year as well. And you know, thinking about that and thinking about what you've just said, you've just nailed it. I mean, we could all athletes could wallow in self-pity, and I mean, obviously, if you had a choice, you'd be doing your normal schedule. But this is an opportunity for you to do something different. So you're dead right. It makes so much sense. Now, I have to ask you, obviously you brought it up, you did have a little mishap back in late June where you broke your collarbone. I know most people do know that's happened, and I actually followed via your Instagram post your comeback, which was brilliant. I don't think I've ever seen an athlete do it so perfectly, and I think you were rewarded, because I think you actually recovered from that break very, very quickly. But has it actually healed completely now? And is your swimming back where you need it? When I say where you need it to be, is it back to where it was pre? No.
That's a good thing if you are such a bad swimmer. I think sometimes
you're
even
not
like
a bad
3 week break can't even make it any worse.
Yeah, this is well. That's true.
I mean, yes, I had another X-ray just 10 days ago now, and it looks really good. So I managed not to fuck it up somehow by doing too much too early. Bench pressing 200 pounds just like 3 days after the surgery or something like that. I mean, you know, I'm always watching all kinds of different sports, and I can remember like so many people with broken collarbones, and I can remember Tyler Hamilton riding Tour de France with a broken collarbone.
Madness.
And then, I mean, it's not a broken collarbone, but Marc Márquez, MotoGP rider, MotoGP world champion, broke his arm, and then he managed to fracture the plate that they did to fix it, together with the bone again. And I mean, I think sometimes, especially now during this time, of course, you know, even the day after the surgery, it felt so good. I thought like it's gonna be okay. I can go to the pool like in 1 or 2 days. It's gonna be fine.
It'll be fine.
As soon as the stitches are pulled, I'm gonna jump in the pool. But that's one of the things you realize as an athlete. It's important what you do, but it's even more important sometimes that you choose the right people that surround you. And
exactly.
With my wife and my coach and so on, it's such a good team that they usually stop me from doing something really stupid or whatsoever. So therefore, yeah, I think the team really got to shine when you are in trouble. And yes, I mean, it was just absolutely awesome, you know. Just 3 hours after I crashed, I already was lying in the room where they did the surgery. So
wow.
It was just really
That's
fortunate.
Incredible.
So yeah. I know when people look at it, especially on social media, you know, it always looks like everybody's doing it faster than you and better and so on.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's one of the things when you do professional sport. It's usually during the times where not everything is perfect where you make the difference. And I think so I'm pissed for like 24 hours. That I did a mistake and that I wasn't paying attention enough and so on. And then you need to focus on what you can do. And I know this is like, everybody tells you that. And it's whenever I get this advice, I want to throw up. But but it's really true. Like
it is
at one
true.
Point, it doesn't help to be mad at you or mad at the situation or whatsoever. And then I like full on go with all the energy to try to solve the problem and try to, yeah, to make it better. And I think that helps me a lot.
No, I agree. And I always have a motto, you know, when shit goes wrong, you're allowed a 24-hour grace period to be angry. Yeah. But then you've got to get over it. And then you realize it's just a waste of energy in the wrong direction. But that's when, honestly, Sebi, that's when having a great team like you've got around you. So you mentioned Tina, your wife, your coach, Philip Seep, who obviously is doing a brilliant job. When you have a great team around you to keep you mentally back on track so that, and also to stop you doing things that are going to be worse, make the situation worse. And I think that from when you broke your collarbone to where you are now, you've had such a great team around you steering in the right direction. And also the fact you don't give yourself enough credit here. You know your body better than anyone. So you know what you're able to and what you're not. And if you did happen to just push it just that touch too far, you've got your coach there to say, back it off, buddy. You need to calm down. So you've done a really good job because I know a lot of people that have broken their collarbones. They've come back too quickly. They've broken it again. It's rebroken. And something that should have been fixed in a month or two has taken you know, almost a year. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's always the thing that I see with athletes that are probably new to the sport or that will never, ever make it to the top is by trying to rush the things. They will actually slow the things down.
Exactly. Yeah.
They probably just have a slight flu or whatsoever, but they can't wait another day. You know, they need to go. They need to go for it, and then they get really sick or whatsoever, and then it costs them like a week or 4 weeks or even months.
Yeah,
and I think that's what I really learned sometimes is you have to slow the things down to speed them up.
Absolutely.
Another saying I want to throw up when I hear it, but
but it's true.
But it's also just true. And sometimes I really have to say this like a mantra to myself that it's not gonna help you to whatever fulfill all. Everything that's on the schedule if you know it's probably gonna break you.
No, it's so true. Now Sebi, let's talk about your coach. I mean you've mentioned him a few times now. You're coached by Philip Seep, who's obviously also the husband and coach of top German female pro Laura Philipp. You look like you've got a really, really cool squad there. Do you spend a lot of time face to face with Philip, or do you still do a good chunk of the work on your own when you're home? How often are you actually in a group situation where Philip's right there with you?
Especially this year, it wasn't a lot of time face to face, and also not a lot of time in the group because it was just not really a chance. But I always try to train with single people out of the group, especially with Florian Angert.
Yep.
And then of course with Laura in the pool, we definitely spend some time together in the pool. That's it's always the most important thing for me. Running and cycling is not a problem to do on my own, but especially swimming, it helps to swim with other people. And in the past years, I spent way too much time on my own.
Yeah. Okay.
And, it's just a very good mix because the thing is, I also don't want to have my coach with me like every single session because it takes away that little bit of extra motivation you get when somebody is actually standing next to you on the pool deck and has the stopwatch in his hands. It always it always brings some extra pressure and motivation. So, but I don't want to have that every day, to be honest. So therefore, it's a good combination. Yeah.
And you're dead right. I mean, you want to be able to still be independent and be able to do it on your own as well.
Yes, and I mean, the thing is, when you're on your own, you feel when you're tired, and you just go a little bit easier. You don't force it or whatsoever. But if your coach is next to you, you always try to please the coach, and you always try to give your very best, because you want to show that you are motivated and so on and so on and so on. And that it's a good thing, but to have it like in every session is probably also, yeah.
Bit too much.
Very stressful.
No, I totally agree. Now, Sebi, I hope you don't mind me saying this to the big wide world. You're 36. Which is, in my eyes, sweetheart, you are still very, very young. So you're 36. You've already cemented yourself as one of the all-time greatest long-distance athletes in the world, even if you don't think so. I know so. You've got two Ironman 70.3 world titles. You've won the Ironman World Championships back in 2014. You also have three podiums at that particular race as well. You won Challenge Roth in 2018. I mean, I could get, the list goes on and on. Looking back now to when you very first started in the sport, did you envision that you would be this successful?
I dreamed about it, that's for sure. I mean, I have this like school newspaper from the third or fourth grade in primary school, and everybody had to write down what he wants to become when he's grown up, and I wrote down, I want to be a professional triathlete.
No way.
Yeah.
See, it was really meant to be. It was meant to be.
I mean, I was 8 years old back then. And,
crazy.
And my class teacher told me it has to be something realistic where you actually can earn money. And I think all the other guys that wrote something down, none of them became what they wrote
said.
Down back then.
No
and
way.
The guy with the smallest
with the crazy dream.
Yeah.
that's an awesome story.
Yeah. I can send you a picture of this particular page in the newspaper or in the
I love
magazine.
It.
Anyway, I think I never was shy of, you know, having big dreams, but it's a different story to have goals, because for me it's quite a huge difference. I still have some big dreams, but I would not call them goals, because goals for me have to be something I really think that they are realistic. But over the time, this big dream became a goal, and then it's way easier to pursue that. And so I think in 2005 or 2006, that was the time when I really thought, actually, you can now say this is a goal and not a dream anymore. And I don't speak about the dreams, but I'm not shy to communicate goals. So and then I started to be honest with myself and said, like, okay, this is a goal now. And so I think that was the time when I realized I actually have what it takes to win one of these big races.
Be one of the best. Now, please don't think I'm being cruel here, because I would never be cruel to you. but I know you also prefer people to say things as they are, not to what we call pussyfoot around. Or sugarcoat things. But when I first met you, and you probably do not even remember, I was trying all day today to make sure I got the year right. It was the very first year that I went to Challenge Krakow. It may have even been the very first year that Challenge Krakow, which is now obviously Ironman, but back then it was a challenge race. I'm thinking it was 2008.
Was it already a challenge, or was it Kraichgau Triathlon Festival?
No, it was like it was, I'm pretty sure it was a challenge race. So that maybe the
was,
first year that
Chris,
was challenge.
Chris racing that year.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Then I know what year you mean.
So I know you were there because someone introduced me to you, and I won't tell you what I thought. Oh, well, I will later, but I'll tell you. But I remember, I don't even think that you did you do the half distance that year, or did you just do the Olympic distance race?
I think I did the Olympic distance race, but I'm not 100% sure, because the first year when it was a challenge, I did the middle distance race.
Okay, so it might
and
have
I
been.
Think, yeah.
It might have been then, but
yeah,
I remember
and I
someone.
Think it was middle distance. Yeah.
I remember someone coming up to me, another German, and saying, "Oh, that's Sebastian Kienle. You know, he's a phenomenal bike rider. He's going to be really good." And I said, "Oh, right, okay." And I didn't know anything about you, but you know, I was coming over from as an Australian athlete, so I didn't know much about the German athletes. Only about the guys that were doing really well in Kona. And I remember looking at your results afterwards and thinking, well, for someone that's going to be one of the greatest athletes, he can't swim. He can definitely bike. He can definitely ride. He can definitely ride. I will always give you that. And your run was, well, it was okay, but it wasn't lightning fast. But even when I think back to how far you've come since that race to say the next year, so 2009, when you came back and did that race again and you won it, I mean, just the transformation in 1 year was incredible. So, yeah, it's funny how you said about 2006, you said you started to realize the dreams were then goals. And then I think between 2008 and 2009, the difference that I saw personally from you was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think with a lot of athletes, they probably know before everybody else knows what
yes,
they are
yes.
capable of or what they are not capable of. And I think one of the good things for me is until probably that year, 2009 or 2007, when I became German under 23 champion on the short distance, I think I never really won any big races. I had a couple of good results in our league and so on. But yeah, like you said, it was like from the outside, not a lot of people would have thought that this is possible. But that's the thing, as somebody from the outside, you get to see the result list and you look at times and so on. Mm-hmm. But you don't know what the person was training for that result, for example.
No, and exactly.
Until that point, I was still studying full time.
Yeah, and, okay.
I think I probably trained like 15 or 17 hours per week. And I know the bang for the bucks was already like pretty good. Of course, with a lot of athletes, they think, oh, now I just do double the amount and the result is double as good. It's not working like that
no,
for sure. That's
no.
That was something I knew, of course. But I knew I can do a lot of things so much better. And when I then focused fully on sport without having any big distractions around me, I think that just completely changed everything, changed my mindset, but also, yeah, I mean, I was able to run like at that time pretty fast, but the problem was always I destroyed myself completely on the bike all the time, and I didn't have the endurance and the hours in my legs to back this up.
Yeah. And it's interesting you talk, because one thing I've learned about you over the years of just watching you and getting to know you as an athlete, as a person, is you are one hell of a determined man. Like the determination that I see, obviously in training, but what I see it in racing, because that's when I get to follow you. But the thing that I think you have, and a lot of elite athletes think they've got it, but they don't, is you've never shied away from working on your weaknesses. And not a lot of athletes have the courage to do this. And I'm not just talking about having a run week or a swim week here and there thrown into the program. I'm talking about having the courage to maybe say, okay, my bike, I'm just going to put that on the back burner and I'm really, truly going to work hard for an extended period of time on my swim and my run. And it's tough because, you know, when you do that, that it could mean for the interim losing a little bit of your only strength, which, you know, you're a superstar on the bike. But now I look at you now and you've swimming. Okay. We're not going to say you're a superstar swimmer because that would be silly, but you've definitely improved your swim dramatically from where you first started, and your bike and run is up there with the best in the world, if not the best. So your bike run combination is phenomenal. And I know that that just didn't happen once you gave up, you finished university and you just trained full time. I know that's because you obviously made a lot of sacrifices because you trusted your coach, you trusted yourself, and you worked on your weaknesses, not for a week or two or not for a month here and there, but for a bloody long time.
Belinda, I think now you are indeed sugarcoating things a little bit.
No, I'm not, I promise.
To be honest, I sometimes, I mean, I'm not 100% sure if this is like 100% correct, because in a lot of the races in last years, I actually haven't been that much closer than I was like 4 or 5 years back, especially when it comes to swimming. When I look at 70.3 worlds in Nice, also Kona last year, it's always pretty much the same gap. It doesn't mean that I'm not improving or that I'm not working enough on the swim or whatsoever, but it's a couple of things. First of all, everybody is developing. Nobody is just like, you know,
staying the same,
resting on what they have, and I mean, they know the good swimmers need to have this gap on people like me, like Cam Wirth, and so on, you know. So therefore everybody is working, and that's in nature of the competition. So I think sometimes I probably didn't had enough determination to work even harder on the swim, and sometimes I think I have not done enough in a lot of ways. But then on the other hand, I always know there is this line, and when I cross this line, I start to lose the fun in all sport. And then it's not working anymore for me. So therefore, sometimes it's very difficult, you know. I know, let's say for a race like Davos, I need to have a chance. I would need to lose like 2 kilos body weight at least. But the thing is, I think I would be able to do that. But the problem is, I would also not lose those 2 kilos, but I also lose a lot of fun and what drives me in the sport, and that's one of the problems. I think I don't have the same, you know, intrinsic motivation than probably, for example, Jan has in some ways. And that's the reason why I also have a shit ton of second places, probably way more than wins. But you know, that's also one of the things you realize, especially when you're 36, is I look back even now, and with a lot of races, I don't even can remember the result. But I remember like the time and the good time we had and so on. And I know this is like a circle. If I'm in that circle, I will also perform really well. And I would probably not lose 2 kilos, but 1. But I don't lose the fun. And so therefore, it's a winning combination still. Yeah.
Honestly, I could not agree with you more. You know, I often get asked the question, you know, how were you a professional athlete for so many years? Didn't you ever get sick of it? But I have the exact same mindset as you, Sebi, in that it was never a chore, because it never became a chore for me. So it was, and it was never just a job. And it was always enjoyable. And I look back on every single year with such fond memories.
That's really the thing that scares me with a lot of the absolutely top athletes. Probably not so much in our sport, because also the window where you can perform in our sport is like pretty large. But in a lot of sports, I mean, when you hear stories about, you know, burnouts and really heartbreaking stories about depression and so on, I think that's something sport should not do to you, you know, and you should, it's about you to not let that happen, you know. at the end of the day, yeah, it's, we all strive for like this attention and the wins and so on. You all want to be in the limelight. And of course, the difference between fifth place and first place in Kona is probably $1.5 million a year. I mean, that's for sure. But the thing is, it's not worth it at the end. I mean, that's what I experienced, or what I found out for me. And it's also not,
totally agree.
It might lead to success in 1 or 2 years, but usually not over a stretch of like 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, so true. And it's interesting that you talk about this as being the way you think, because one of the things I wanted to talk about to you today is, and I've spoken to you about this before, is that you race a little differently to not all other German athletes, but many German athletes. And I know I'm putting the German athletes in this tiny little capsule, and I know that's not, you know, I'm generalizing just a little bit here, but most of the German athletes I've known in the past, and good German athletes, have always raced by numbers. It's always about, Justin and I, when we first came to Germany all those years ago, we were blown away. It was all about your computer on your bike, or all about the numbers and all about what Garmin's telling you. And they would show very little emotion when they're out there on the race course. Now, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It was just completely different to anything we'd seen before. And then, of course, you came along and you were a breath of fresh air for us. Because I've always said to you, no, Sebi, you're not a normal German. You race with the numbers and you race with your brain, but you also race with your heart. Now, I've said this to you so many times, but it's just so obvious when you're out there on the race course how much the sport means to you and how much you are always willing to give of yourself out there. And a good example is 2018, when you won Challenge Roth, and I was lucky enough to be doing all the social media updates. So I got to follow you on the pretty much all day long. But, you know, I was on the back of the motorbike and I got to watch you and Cam Wirth absolutely destroying the bike course out there. You know, you started with I still remember the first up, started with that huge bunch of about 20 pro men, and just every few kilometres, you know, a couple more would pop off the back until, you know, we ended up at the thing for the second lap. It was Cam, yourself and Jesse Thomas. And then, of course, I think Jesse Thomas lasted one lap, then the next lap he's like, I'm out. And just to see the determination on your face and in your eyes all day, and you could just see that you were loving it, and you backed yourself, even to the extent when you knew when to let Cam go in the end, and you said, okay, I need to make sure I've got a good 42K in me, and you could see that you'd made the decision, okay, Cam, you keep doing what you're doing, and I'm just going to concentrate on me now. But honestly, I've been to so many races over so many years, but that one still stands out in my mind because I got to follow you all day and watch, and I get freaking goosebumps talking about it now because it was awesome. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, me too. I'm also getting goosebumps hearing you talk about it.
So
I mean,
cool.
I think that's where these two lines of like your performance and your experience pretty much cross. That's the moment where they really much crossed. And I remember we even talked about that after the race. And I, you told me that you saw like this, this impression in my face and the willpower almost like spraying out everywhere of my body, and I think I told you that I would say that I was even scared that I don't have this anymore, because just like 4 or 5 years earlier I would never had Cam let go, you know.
Exactly.
But then I probably would have destroyed myself completely, and I would have not won the race.
No.
And now I know till what point I need to go with my heart, and at what point I need to also use my brain a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I think you know, as a professional sports person, you always look for like some sort of number that proves that you are like above everybody else, that you are more talented, that, you know, it's written in the books that you're gonna win a lot of races. And so therefore the people doing all these performance tests and stuff, and But the honest truth is, I know a lot of the numbers from other athletes, and compared to these numbers, my numbers are actually not very good. You know, I mean, my VO2 max is not above 80. And I mean, looking at the Norwegian guys, they have like VO2 max numbers of 90.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And but then, you know, the thing is, and then obviously they beat me in a race like Nice, but. For example, in Nice, I ran faster than Javi Gomez, Alistair Brownlee, and Christian Blumenfeld. On paper, this would never be possible.
No,
you know, because their 10K best is probably 1 minute or 1.5 minutes faster than mine. But the thing is, I realize, and I think that came even more within the last years. In training, I can go only till like 95% of what I'm able to do. When I was a young kid, it was different because every training session was a competition and I wanted to prove myself and so on. But now I really know, okay, on this day, I can still go like way above what I would think is possible in training. And so it's always... I mean, when I train with a lot of these guys, I always think like, why don't they beat me in any competition? Because they're just so much better in training than me. But then on race day, I'm still ahead of them.
Yeah.
And I think I think it's better that way around than the other way around.
Absolutely. It's the best way. Now, you're probably going to hate me for this. But I did tell you before that I was going to keep it nice. So going back to when I first met you, we have a bit of an expression. It's a Kiwi / Aussie expression. I remember when I first met you, when someone introduced me, I thought you were a bit of a dag. Now, I'll explain to you what a dag is. It basically means that you looked a little goofy, maybe even a little bit odd or quirky. Maybe a nicer word is quirky. You had a funny haircut, you wore glasses, and your race kit was not well coordinated. In fact, to be honest, if someone had said, you know, that's the next world champion, I would have laughed at them. However, fast forward to today, and you were probably one of, if not the coolest athletes on the race course, on and off the race course. So I know most podcasts want to talk about Sebi as the athlete and Sebi as the racing god, but you know, I'm a female and sometimes I just we look at things a little differently. But I cannot believe that the goofy daggy boy that I knew way back in the day, now when I see you on the race course, you're like one of the coolest looking guys on the race course with you. Everything's matching. The only other athlete that I would put in the same boat as you is Luke McKenzie, because he always has everything matching and always looked amazing as well. But you know, even off the field now too, you've turned into the cool kid. I mean, I would love. Do you ever look back and laugh?
To be honest, I think the only pictures I really like of me is when I'm actually on the race course, because everything else is, I think, it's still the goofy.
No,
goofy
kid. No, you're cool.
At least every morning when I look in the mirror, I think like. Wow, I mean, I think the people here, when they don't know who I am and that I actually make a pretty good living with my sport, they think I must be homeless, worthless person. The thing is just, I actually really, really enjoy that. A lot of, I mean, there's this German haute couture designer, and he said, if you're wearing your jogging pants on a work day, you lost control over your life. And to be honest, for me, it's the exact opposite. If I am able to wear whatever I want every day, I have the maximum control over my life, because I don't have to give a fucking shit what everybody else is thinking. Sorry for that.
No, it's true though. No dress, but no rules.
In Germany. That's how I think of it. It's I'm I think I really made it in life because I don't have to wear a suit or whatsoever to make an impression on people, you know.
And yeah, totally.
I think that's something I always really enjoyed in my sport. And I mean, right now with no races and all the social media things, I mean, I'm putting stuff out on social media and I look at my own stories and I think like, what the, I mean, it's funny.
You've got it wrong. You are the cool kid in school right now. I'm telling you, I know. You're the cool kid. What I want you to do, talking about social media, what I want you to do, I want you to go back about 10, 15 years and I want you to grab some of those old pictures and start putting those pictures up on Insta and let all your fans see the old Sebi back in the day with the goofy Sebi with his glasses. And
I'll definitely get one out. That's for sure. Yeah.
You got to promise me.
For you.
I love it. Now, I do. Sebi, I've always thought, I mean, and now again, I'm not sugarcoating. This is actually the truth. You are also a very clever, I mean, we all joke and we say you're goofy, but you're also an extremely clever guy. I mean, anyone who's able to use sarcasm in a language that's not their mother tongue is really impressive. And I know everyone loves it when you're invited to a press conference because you always keep it interesting, you keep it fun, even a little controversial at times. But whenever someone like Sebi Kinlay is turning up to a press conference, people want to go. For example, you know, the banter between yourself and Cam Wirth, it always makes not just me but everyone laugh. It's good fun. And I really love the fact that you're able to keep it a little lighthearted off the race course, even if it's all business on the race course. Do you know this about yourself? This is why I think you are so lovable, is because I don't actually think you realize how funny you are. That makes sense.
Probably I don't even realize myself. Maybe I just don't have a clue what I'm talking about. I'm just repeating phrases from ESPN, you know. It's
No, you're doing it yourself.
The thing, what's really great in our sport is first of all that this is possible, that it's that's even possible, you know. I mean that you're not having like these people around you that tell you what you need to say and how you say it and so on. So that's something I like. And then the next thing is, I mean, I spent probably like four months every year in the US or in any English speaking country. And even if Josh Emberger still always gives me shit about speaking Spanglish, or in my case, Danglish.
Oh, I love it.
And whenever I do a YouTube video, it's like, it's so funny because the people that give me shit about my English are usually the German English teachers. It's so funny. So therefore, yeah, I think that's what I really enjoy in our sport, is that you are able to travel other countries and you not only see the hotel room and the race course, but you have like host families and we have friends all over the world, and that definitely helps to also improve some language skills, I guess. Yeah.
And it's funny you bring up Joshy Amberger, because he's we have a saying over here for Joshy. He's an old man in a young person's body.
Yes, he definitely is.
He's got a wise old brain. He's like an 80-year-old in a 30-year-old's body.
But sometimes I think he's an 80-year-old on pot or something like that. Because I mean, whenever I got to hang out with him, it's just really, really good times.
Always. Oh, he's gorgeous.
I think in some ways, I'm a little bit similar to Josh.
You're like a German version of Josh. I absolutely, seriously.
Not as extreme as Josh.
No.
But also a little bit ADHD influence for sure.
Yes. And just the fact that you get Josh's sense of humor, because I mean, to me, Josh Amberger is one of the funniest guys on the planet, but a lot of people, they don't get it and they miss it and they think, what are you talking about? He's not funny. I said, he's bloody hilarious.
Well, but I think whenever somebody doesn't know what we are actually speaking about, he needs to check out some of Josh's race reports, after race reports on Instagram or Twitter or whatsoever, and then then it's pretty obviously that it is funny.
Absolutely, totally agree. Oh, I totally agree. Now, looking forward to 2021, which is something I think we've all been doing since about March this year, praying that 2021 would come around. Obviously for you, the number one plan will be Kona in October. This is if the world gets back to some sort of normal. So Kona in October, you were third last year behind Jan and Tim O'Donnell. And I know quite a few age group athletes here. I was talking today to some friends at the pool who didn't get to go to Kona, and I'm saying, oh, I'm talking to Sebi today, and they were like, oh, please, we want to know what happened to his foot last year in the race. We know something happened, and we can't believe that he actually still made it to the podium. So one thing they wanted me to ask you is what did happen to your foot last year in the race? And it is pretty incredible that you still were able to hold on to a podium spot. I mean, we're talking about the World Championships here.
I think they were talking about my right hip and
hip, was it? Oh, they seemed to think it was something with your foot, but so it was your right hip.
Yeah. I mean, in Frankfurt, I stepped into a piece of glass. And
that's right. Sorry, yeah, must have been hip.
Foot,
yeah,
so
that's my
probably
fault.
Got mixed up. Yeah. But also in Kona, I think it was like a week before the race. We were still in Maui, and I just did some lunges in the garden, and so I had this slight pain in my hip flexor, and I thought, yeah, it's not that bad, and then it got a little bit worse leading up to the race, but we didn't do much training anymore, so it wasn't like really a big issue. But then, yeah, the last like 5Ks in a race, it got like really, really bad. And I mean, I was so happy at one point, you know, you don't even care about, you know, second place or first place anymore. The only thing I cared about was like, hopefully, you know, Ben Hoffman is not smelling this somehow and still believes he can make the podium. But he was chasing so hard.
Yeah.
And running down Palani, I thought like my right leg is gonna just like collapse under me and then it's all over. But yeah, made it to the finish line, was super happy, but like the week after I could barely walk anymore. And I thought I will do Ironman Cozumel, and I was really motivated for that one. But it took me like, I don't know, like almost 2 months of no running after the race.
Wow.
To get it healed again. I think it was just absolutely perfect timing. It lasted till the very last step.
Now it's interesting that you bring that up, because let's talk about that just quickly. So Ironman Frankfurt was when you got the piece of glass in your foot, and you basically, it was stuck in there pretty much for the entire run, or did you end up being able to take it out?
I must have stepped on it on the Australian exit after the first lap of the swim. During the swim, I just felt like a slight, like, burning sensation. It wasn't really that bad. And then, but when I ran to my bike, I was like, oh, actually, this feels like there's something in it. And it was quite painful to just, like, run through a transition area. But I just took a quick look at it, but I couldn't like figure if there's something in it or whatsoever. And then I hopped on the bike, and on the bike it wasn't an issue because you don't have much pressure on the heel. But I could see like there was quite some blood in the shoe, and so I was talking to one of the referees if I could get medical assistance in T2, because I thought that there's still something in it, and something stuck in the heel. And yeah, so they checked back, and yeah, the medical stuff was just absolutely awesome. They were prepared. Sure. They told me on the bike already that somebody is waiting there and that it's okay, that it's not, that I don't get a penalty or whatsoever for taking outside assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and then they were really quick to get it out. And so it wasn't really hurting that much on the run at the beginning, a little bit. And it was just, yeah, burning because I think all the salt and water and whatsoever.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I got into the wound, but then it was all right, yeah.
But it's interesting that when you talk about it, so that's two big races. I mean, obviously Ironman Frankfurt has a phenomenal field every year. Ironman World Championships has the best field. And that's two things that have happened to you in those big races that under normal circumstances would either mean you DNF or you have a shitty race. But either way, you let it get to you mentally. Like you were just saying, physically you could handle it. Particularly, you know, said after the first few kilometers on the run, it didn't hurt anymore. But that's one thing. But mentally, knowing that what you've done is not great, and the same with your hip blowing out in Kona, but still being able to push through. Do you think that this is one of the things that separates you and makes you as good as you are, is because you are mentally just able to stay on task and push through and not, because you know as well as I do, Sebi, the last 12 to 15K of an Ironman run, yeah, you know, always. You'll use any excuse. You'll use any excuse to slow down or to say, well, you know what, it doesn't matter if I don't get this podium spot because I've got an injury, or it doesn't matter if I don't win Ironman Frankfurt because I've just had a ruddy great piece of glass taken out my foot. But that doesn't seem to be even part of your vocab. It doesn't seem to even slip into your mindset.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think it's very difficult to describe to somebody who hasn't done a long course triathlon. Like you said, at one point you just use any excuse. And but at the same time, you know, you worked so hard for this, but then it's just not possible to press reset like in a computer game and start
again.
The day again or whatever, you know. And I've had that once, and that was at 70.3 World Championships in Mont-Tremblant in 2015. And I got there as a defending champion, and my swim was horrible, I would say, as always, pretty much. But then also on the bike, you know, I mean, I didn't felt right and I didn't have the power. But then I started to find excuses. You know, I was like, oh, you changed the saddle, it's not the right seat height, and so on and so on and so on. And I got in this spiral of negative thoughts. And I mean, I didn't give up the race, but I gave myself up pretty much, and I ended up, I don't know, 19th place or something like that.
Yeah.
And this, like, I still can remember, like, this hurted so much because I knew you were lying to you the whole time. It was not true. It was not what happened. What happened was you had a bad day, and instead of, like, accepting it and trying to still make the best out of it, you gave yourself up, and you found a lot of excuses to sacrifice that you don't have to hurt yourself anymore. But this hurted so much more in the weeks after than everything else. And on the other side, I think I just got lucky pretty early on, because I got tested very early on. I think the very first time I raced in Kona in 2012, I was leading the bike together with Marino van Hoenacker, and I had a flat tire, and I mean, I did some really stupid things with my wheels and the tires back then. I don't want to go into too much details, but I was not able to change the tire by myself, and even if I had like a tube and a CO2 and so on. But so I had to wait for neutral assistance, and it took like, what, 10 minutes for them to be there. And so I think there was a chance that I would win this race, because at the end I still had the best bike split, even with these, like, I don't know, 8 minutes, 10 minutes waiting. And then I ended up fourth place, but I was really happy because I knew I didn't give myself up at that time. It would have been easy to say, like, oh yeah, you had a flat tire, next time you have a chance, but then you always have to wait 1 year. And
a long time. Yeah,
and I think that's the reason why I realized it hurts so much more to tell yourself some lies. And even if it's true, I mean, to know for yourself, like, you fought through that and you still had something positive out of it, it's so motivating, because you sort of, like, prove yourself that you can pretty much fight through everything. And then that's the reason why you end up winning on another day when you don't have any problems. Because if you start to give up because of something like that, you start to give up because of a lot smaller things.
Exactly.
I lost my nutrition. Yep. Oh my god, what should I do? I'm gonna give up the race. Yeah. Next year. You know, oh, I had a cramp on the bike. I'm gonna give up, you know. It just was not my day, you know. Oh, I lost my Garmin, my power wasn't working, I didn't know what to do. Yeah.
Exactly. That's a good start. That's a good start. But it's so true, Sebi. And then it also goes back to what you were saying about numbers on paper. You can have the greatest numbers on the planet, but And you know, like we've been seeing with a lot of this Zwift racing, I know there's been a lot of people coming out of Zwift races and the numbers they're showing are phenomenal, but then you get them on a racetrack when stuff doesn't go the way it's supposed to be. I mean, when you're sitting inside a garage or inside a pain cave that's all, you know, with the air conditioning going, of course everything's beautiful, but get yourself out into the real world when shit does go wrong. And let's face it, there's probably never been one race that you've done where everything has gone absolutely, exactly, perfectly. And I think this is what's made you a world champion. It's one of the big reasons that you've been world champion many times, for sure.
And it's also the most rewarding thing at the end. Yep. It's not, yep, you know, the thing is, when you have an easy win and an easy race, it's not something I remember very long.
No, or that's right.
Pat myself on the shoulder for, or whatever. It's most of the times the things I remember is when it was really, really bad, but you were still able to somehow hold it together, or when you really wanted to give up and just, you know, sit down on the aid station or stop at your hotel and just go into the
room.
Yeah,
easy to do. So yeah, easy to do.
AC room. I mean, you know, 2018, I gave up the race in Kona when I had these Achilles problems.
Problem, yeah.
And even like 2 months later, I still asked myself, like,
why?
Wasn't it possible to somehow
hold it together?
Yes. You know, I mean, and that's like way, way worse for me than handling the pain for like,
totally agree.
4 hours and then it's all right, you know.
Totally agree.
But it's also dangerous.
Yeah.
If you always do that, and if you always push through, you also at one point you can just harm yourself, you know.
That's true.
Also not a good thing.
No.
At one point you need to be able to separate from something that will probably really does damage to your
harm
body.
You. That's right.
And something that's just in your head and just an excuse. So,
and I think you know.
I also don't like the people that say like a DNF is no option and you have to finish under any circumstances and under any means and so on, because that's also just not true.
No. I think as athletes, you should know your body well enough that. And I can tell you now that I did Kona 10 times and I DNF'd once. And it's the greatest regret I've ever had in my entire career, because I basically gave up. So there was no reason, there was no injury. I just knew I wasn't going to have a good race and I didn't want to have a shitty result against my name. So I gave up. And truly to this day, it is my only one regret in my career. So I think we know the difference between finishing because we should finish or having to give up because we know if we continue to run or walk, we're going to do more damage than good. There's a difference.
Yeah. 100%.
And we know it. We know it. Yeah. We're kidding ourselves.
And I think that's the reason why I have so much respect also for athletes. I mean, every year it's the same thing. In Kona, everybody arrives with so high expectations, and they have the right to have high expectations. You know, there are at least probably 15 or 20 guys who can make the podium. That's
just the way it is.
And they go there and they have the goal, I want to make a podium. But then at one point they realize, oh, this is not going to happen anymore. It's going to be like 10th or 15th place. And to still stay motivated and fight for something, if you realize it's not going to be your dream that's going to be fulfilled that day.
Yeah.
It's so hard, but I have so much respect also for somebody like Lionel, who's even has probably the chance and the goal to win the race, but you still walk and run and walk and run and end up having like a 10-hour finish or whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I think that's something that gives you the power to do all the training and everything for the next year. And
I agree. Totally agree. I mean, and you've hit the nail on the head. And I mean, Lionel Sanders is a perfect case point there because he knew that he could finish and he wasn't going to do any more harm, but he went there with a goal. And I think we all have different goals. The first goal for you guys is to win and then to podium. And then you obviously have sub goals if things start not to work out. And it's all about just, okay, my sole goal right now is just to finish. This is the World Championships. I'm going to show my respect because it is the World Championship and I'm going to make it to the finish. But on the same hand, if it's going to mean that you're going to be injured for the rest of the year or into next year, then that's a decision. It's a tough decision to make, but it's one that I think all athletes, not just professional athletes, but age group athletes need to make as well because, you know, if you don't have your health, then you don't have anything. So, yeah, I used to think back when I was young that, no, you finish under all costs, regardless. Then I got a little older and a little wiser. It was all about, well, okay. I used to stop and actually talk to myself and say, is it going to harm you in any way to get through this race? And if it wasn't going to harm me, then I make it to the finish line, even if it meant 11 hours or 12 hours. But, yeah, it's a tough call.
Yeah. 100%. And I mean, of course, in some positions, I mean, if you run in second place and like the first guy is 30 seconds in front of you and you know you're going to harm yourself, if you try to close the gap, of course I'm going to harm myself. I mean,
that's different. That's a little different.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's also why we love this sport. It's pushing to your limits
and even finding new limits that you didn't even know you had. Well, Sebi, I hope that we definitely get to watch you race in Challenge Davos at the end of this month. It's not very far away, which is very exciting. I think, you know, it's the closest we've got. I can't see anything going wrong between here and now. Fingers crossed. I know I shouldn't be speaking too soon. And I hope that we get to see you at a couple more races before the year is out, definitely. But what I am most looking forward to is actually seeing you in person at a race. I don't even care where it is, but somewhere around the world sometime next year.
Yeah, thanks, Belinda. I just hope so too. And I hope to see all the people that are listening and just seeing the Triathlon family again. That would be really nice.
Absolutely. Well, listen, good luck. And I think you're going to do better in Davos than you give yourself credit to, because I know how much
you're going to find out.
I know what a fighter you are. Take care, and I'll speak to you again soon, gorgeous. Thank you.
Thanks.
Ciao.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I really hope you enjoyed listening. If you'd like to continue listening and stay updated on our latest podcasts, then please subscribe. It would also be great if you could rate our podcast and leave us a review.
If you have any specific questions you'd like me to ask the athletes, then please send through to the following email address, podcast@challenge-family.com. The making of these podcasts would not be possible without the wonderful help of our great partners, Powerbar, Otso, Zone 3, Lubos Bilic at LB Training, Sport No Limit Group, and VeloSoc. But for now, thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back soon for another coffee.